Now, this did not mean that the so-called traditionalists, like Brahms, or Dvorak for that matter, wrote retro-Mozartian faux Haydn-esque music. They did not. And we need to do a back-to-back demonstration to show that. I do want to play you some Haydn, a classical era composer, his symphony number 104. Haydn kept himself busy. This is the first movement, and this dates from 1796. It is a typical classical era theme. Let's play it and then talk about it. Okay, it's short, it's concise, the phrases are easily followed, it's memorable and it's tuneful, it's classic in terms of its emotional restraint. Haydn doesn't go too far either in one direction of sadness and unhappiness, and not too far in any other direction either. We don't have a kind of unbuttoned ecstasy here either. Everything is done with taste and control, and it just so happens that that's the first theme of what we call a sonata form movement, and I'll explain sonata form later in this lecture. While that's still in our ears, though, it's important that we listen to some Brahms. Brahms, the supposed classicist. Brahms, the traditionalist. I'm going to play the opening of his symphony number 1 in C minor, opus, which means the order in which a work was published means it was assigned an opus number representing that order. So this is his 68th published work because it's opus 68. And it was written between 1862 and 1876. That's 14 years. I'll explain later also why it took him so damn long to get this thing on paper. But meanwhile, let's get back to the beginning of this symphony number 1 by Brahms. And while we listen to this, ask yourselves, is this short? Is this concise? Is this restrained expressively like Haydn? Is it classical in the terms of Haydn's classicism? I would point out that there were two episodes in the opening of this symphony. There's that pounding, throbbing, absolutely tragic and funereal beginning, followed by this quiet, weeping, plucked, and I really say tearful second episode, much more quietly projected, and that's where we left off. Now, this music has extraordinary dramatic sweep and dramatic passion. The phrases are not predictable. It is extreme in its expressive content. There's infinitely more harmonic complexity than in the Haydn example, but it just so happens that this is also the beginning of a sonata form movement. Look, the key to Brahms is in our laps. Let's look down at it. Brahms utilizes all the extended melodic and harmonic resources of the late 19th century. His music is as expressive as anything written by the Music of the Future program music group. However, the difference is Brahms's musical ideas are almost always governed and controlled by classical era forms and formal procedures. Brahms is a classicist in that, ultimately, content is determined by form. He asserts control over the large scale by using pre-existing structures, structures that have existed since Mozart's day, and in some cases, structures, assumptions, ways of building music that have existed since Bach's day. And again, these structural elements will become clearer when we actually jump into the violin concerto itself and start moving through the movements. Suffice to say for now that Brahms uses recipes. He looks at his recipe. He buys specific ingredients according to what that recipe calls for. He measures. He tastes. He corrects. And then he serves to an audience who knows approximately now what to expect, because they know at least what they're buying. They know that this is going to be a concerto with three movements or a symphony with four movements. And there is a tradition of symphonies with four movements, so we kind of know what to expect approximately. And then Brahms takes them wherever he takes them once they have that commonality between each other.